right, Bulldog Live here on The Pulse. As I said going into the break, six environmental groups who are openly opposed to the Northern Pass Project have asked the U.S. Department of Energy to look into the specific alternative routes and, you know, to prepare a route for this environmental impact statement, which, as you know, was the purpose of the public scoping meetings that were held all across the state, to which, you know, I attended four of the seven of them that were held, and that is still available on my website at briantilton.com if you wish to go listen to that. One of the gentlemen who spoke at the first public scoping meeting, which was held in Pembroke, which had about 500 people in attendance, which was really off the charts as far as actually Plymouth was even bigger than that, of nearly 700 people showing up to that. And there's 1,200 people just at two meetings. And all just about all of those opposed the Northern Pass Project. So kind of give you an idea of where things stand. But anyway, the lot of concerns will be raised about this environmental impact study. And I think it's something that a lot of people still don't even fully understand. They knew that they were telling the Department of Energy, you've got to look into wetlands issues. You got to look at the potential for terrorism. You should look into the economic impacts that this is going to have on us. And, you know, but what happens with those comments? You know, what is the process with that? Well, joining us right now is Christoph Corshane. He is with the Conservation Law Foundation of New Hampshire in Concord, and he's joining us here in studio. And Christoph, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Brian. I'm glad to be here.
All right, I'll have you talk right into that microphone, a little closer to that.
Thank you.
So the Conservation Law Foundation is one of the number of groups that have spoken out in opposition to the Northern Pass Project, and probably for a lot of reasons, probably more than we have time to state.
CLF is taken a fairly nuanced position on this proposal. We do not like the proposal that is on the table and that is the subject of the permit application, which is before DOE. But we would like to see the process play out before DOE. We think that process could generate a tremendous variety of alternatives that would be beneficial.
CNN Radio. I'm Andy Rose. In Japan, workers at the damaged nuclear
plant are now deliberately pumping radioactive water into the Pacific. Okay, there we go. Sorry about that, Crystal. No. Somebody in the gremlins in the other room.
It's not a problem. The project as proposed, there's very little information about it. We have some routes that have been drawn. Mm-hmm. We have a very brief application which has been presented to the Department of Energy. And
that presidential permit application, because it involves the international border crossing.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. So we have a certain amount of information. CLF and a number of other groups and a number of other interveners came out at the very beginning when DOE announced this application had been filed and said, there's really not enough information in this application for us to make an informed decision on this project. And we want more information. And that's been our position. We really want more information. We want more information on the potential alternatives to this particular proposal. And so the intent of the scoping process, which we've just gone through, where so many members of the public came out, took time, and tried to comment intelligently on this proposal and what it means for them. Those folks have provided comments to DOE, which DOE is supposed to go back, take those into account, and figure out what they're going to study about this project and whether they're going to do a very broad review or a very narrow review. And our view, CLF's view, is that that review needs to be world-class, rigorous, using all the scientific resources that DOE has at its disposal. It's a massive federal agency with tremendous analytical resources. We think that if it does that, the alternatives to this particular route, the new right-of-way, the large, tall, traditional towers, that alternatives to that proposal will come out that will be better for the environment, less impactful to landowners, to property owners, and will make more sense for the regional energy picture and the New Hampshire energy picture. Mm-hmm. We think that that's something that DOE can bring out through this process. We're not sure that it will, but one of the things we're requesting, and which is the subject of our letter last week, is we want DOE to come back, taking into account everything they've heard at these scoping meetings, and using their own expert analysis, and announce what is the plan for analyzing alternatives. What are the impacts? What are the environmental impacts and social impacts and economic impacts that this very large, massive report will cover?
And those are all good points, because as we've heard from a number of people at these public scoping meetings, and again, having attended a few of those, there were a lot of points that were brought up about alternatives. Running the power line through Vermont, where there's already an existing right-of-way and there's already existing high-tension power lines going through there. The concerns about environmental impacts of fragmenting forests, how it's going to affect organic farmers with the spraying that they do typically to keep the vegetation growth underneath the power lines down, the impact on wells, whether they're constructing towers, the blasting that has to be done, the effect it's going to have on their property, the wells, again, pesticide use perhaps, the economic impacts of property devaluations along the line, people who've already seen property sales fall through, deals go fall apart because of the threat of the power lines, or somebody I just talked to yesterday who took his home off the market because he knows he can't sell it with having to disclose the fact that they may be looking at 135-foot towers right over their house. So there's been a lot of points that were brought up on this, whether it be certain wildlife that would be affected, certain types of plants and flowers and trees and the like, is certain things that are very unique in the North Country. So, I mean, there's been a lot of very clear objections and a lot of clear concerns that the Department of Energy should be looking into.
Right, and CLF shares a lot of those environmental concerns. And one of the good things about the National Environmental Policy Act process, the NEPA process, is that those type of issues are supposed to be studied and analyzed in great detail before DOE makes a decision on this permit application. And as a matter of fact, this particular permitting process, one of DOE's criteria for granting a permit is that it believes that the environmental impacts of the project are acceptable. And so that's built into their analysis. So this makes the NEPA process in this case, all this process that we've gone through and the process that's to come, that much more important. It's how DOE makes an informed decision on whether to grant the permit or not.
Sure, and I see that because, again, number of people who have spoken out from the local conservation commissions, the various town planners that had come out and spoke, and I'm thinking Plymouth and Haverhill particularly, we heard a lot of those people talking, who were very concerned about very specific impacts on wetlands and issues like that too. So these are things that we would hope that the Department of Energy would they would hope too that they would look into.
No, we believe they're obligated to do a full analysis there. And when they do that analysis, so there's the two pieces of it. There's the there's the looking at the impacts of what's been proposed. We think that needs to be very, very rigorous and take into account all that public input that has been received so far and will be. There's still the comment period is still open through April 12th for people to submit written comments to DOE through their website. The next part of the process is the alternatives analysis, and people can comment on that during this period, but we don't really know what alternatives DOE is going to take the time to look at seriously. And some of these alternatives require some detailed economic analyses to determine whether they're feasible. That they need to be vetted fully. And that's what this statement, the EIS, is supposed to say at the end of the day.
I'm thinking of some of the alternatives that were brought up during this process so far, and that is to either bury the lines, put them along railroad beds or interstates, ideally burying them there too, following along the Connecticut River or send it through Vermont or send it down like they're doing at the Champlain Hudson Express. Down along existing rail lines and down along the bed of the Hudson River as well, as some of the number of alternatives that have been offered.
Now, our view is that there are all alternative routes. Mm-hmm. There are alternative technologies that could be used, such as the superconductor burial of the lines.
Okay.
There's additionally, DOE should be considering whether the energy needs that this project would satisfy can be satisfied in some other way, whether that be energy efficiency measures, mm-hmm. Conservation programs, and what's called demand response, where people agree to reduce their electric demand under certain circumstances, to see whether that need, if that's the need this project is supposed to be, is proposed to address.
Well, let's talk about that need for just a minute before I have to take a break here, because I like to talk about this a lot further with you. And that is the need has been pretty much widely believed and confirmed by Gary Long, president of Public Service in New Hampshire, and testifying before the legislature. Is it true that 90% of this power is going to go to Connecticut and Massachusetts? Yes, was his answer, in short. And actually, that was the first word out of his mouth. Then he went on with an explanation and so on. And looking at Connecticut, this is just a cursory observation. Connecticut has been losing population for a number of years anyway, and they may be losing more population based on some political things that are playing out down there. So as population leaves, you would think that the amount of energy needed would decrease as well. I don't know what the case is in Massachusetts, whether they've seen an increase or decrease in population, but that would be one thing I would hope that DOE would be looking at. What is the need?
No, absolutely. CLF cares a lot about what the regional energy picture looks like, both from a pure need perspective, and that the need projections are correct,
mm-hmm.
But also from an environmental perspective. Obviously, that's where we're coming from, and whether that power is going to be generated by clean sources of energy, particularly we want to make sure that local renewable energy projects, especially in the North Country, have a level playing field, that they aren't supremely disadvantaged by this power coming in.
The promise of cheap power coming from Hydro-Québec.
Right, and so we also need to understand the environmental impacts of that power in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
There's a long legacy of projects, hydroelectric projects in the far north, that have not adequately honored both native peoples and environmentally beneficial there.
Sure, because in fact, I had a state representative call my show last week who the first question out of his mouth was, is that green energy? And I said, well, it depends on who you ask, because if you ask three different people, you just might get three different answers if hydro is clean energy or not, or green energy.
It's still a question CLF is very interested in, because it does have there are tremendous resources
mm-hmm.
in Canada, and hydroelectric power is, for most people, a green source of energy. The question is whether it is deserving of the kind of treatment of renewable energy that we have accorded, smaller sources of renewable energy,
right,
and solar and small wind installations, which, we want to support and we think are an important part of our energy picture.
And our wood power plants as well, whereas just Thursday, and this is a good programming note for my listeners as well, Thursday night I attended the meeting. New Hampshire Timberland Owners Association did a biomass in crisis summit at Merrimack Valley High School, which I attended. I put that audio up on my website this weekend if you want to go back and listen to it in detail to talk about some of these local wood fire power plants that you may have driven by in Bridgewater, Alexandria, and other places around the state. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that one, I'm sure. But well, I want to talk to you next a little bit more about this environmental impact study what you and the other conservation groups are asking for of the Department of Energy right here on Bulldog Live, 1-866-823-1077. Christoph Korshain from the Conservation Law Foundation continues with me, your host, Bulldog Brian Tilton, on The Pulse.
Bulldog Live will continue after these messages, live on The Pulse.